June is strawberry time. And if you grew the right strawberry plant, September can be strawberry time too. My guest today discusses strawberries and how to keep them happy so they make you happy. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 195.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Culinary Libertarian, welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Jack King is my guest today. Jack was a guest on episode 33 when we talked about cherries. Jack helps run King Orchards, which is in northern Michigan and not too far from my hometown. It's worth the visit just for the views, but get some fruit while you're there. Our talk is cut a bit short. You'll hear Jack say he has to go. Well, that's life in the technology age. We did cover quite a bit and more than enough for you to get a good start on a sound strawberry bed. Hello, Jack. Thank you for joining me today on the Culinary Libertarian Podcast.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
So, did I talk to you back on episode 33 about cherries?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I thought you were older.
I'm the cherry guy, though. It's been grew up on a cherry farm, and we live and breathe cherries here in northern Michigan.
That is a true. For people who don't know, it is, in fact, there's a whole festival built around cherries.
Yeah, it's craziness. It's the famed cherry-growing region, and they only grow them in a few select spots in the United States. So we produce... as our area produces about 90% of the country's tart cherries.
Those things are really nice, although they are what they say, they are tart. Well, we're here to talk today about nearly everything strawberries. And so let's maybe like a strawberry 101, and really not so much for the commercial side, but for the home gardener who, you know, it's June, so that's kind of strawberry season. So are there, let's see if we can just begin with, are there certain types of strawberries, and then what are some popular varieties that people may be able to go to their local megastore and get at the nursery, or maybe at their local mom-and-pop nursery looking for varieties of good strawberries? Yeah.
So, like many plants, there are many, many varieties. The when you start looking, especially in the commercial books, it's like, oh, which one should we pick? Well, there's like hundreds of options. And so you really want to pick one that's going to tailor to your microclimate. Here in northern Michigan, we're a bit colder. We're looking at maybe a little bit shorter season, so we really like the Jewels. That's our favorite variety.
Okay, so are there types of strawberries? I know, and I'm not a botanist, so I might not be using the right botanical words, but I know that there is a kind of berry called the everbearing, which is only true on the point that there's not snow on the ground. It's not going to produce in February. When we were kids, going out to pick strawberries in Michigan, I think we were getting the stuff that ripens once in late June, early July. So are there,
yeah,
what is that kind called?
So there are a couple of different kinds. Ours, I would like a standard spring strawberry is what we normally see. And that has... they generally ripen mid-June to early July. We're in bloom in those right now. So there's tons of flowers all over. From the time you see the blossom, it takes about 2 weeks to see the berries. So as they get going, you'll have both berries and bloom at the same time. And you'll those plants will continue to kick out berries for that 3 to 4 week kind of season. Some varieties are a little earlier, some varieties are a little later to really stretch that out, but Yeah, maybe just 2-3 weeks worth of fruit production. But in that time, it puts out a lot of consistent berries, like berry after berry after berry.
Right.
So that would be like our standard style. We're also growing a day neutral, which is going to be more like that everbearing. It's it has a spring crop. And for us, the ones that we're growing, then it has a fall crop. There's a few in the summertime, but really it's a big spring crop or medium spring crop, very few in the summer, and then a large fall crop right at the beginning of September.
Nice. So I have out in my backyard, I've got some, I think they're called pineapple strawberries. And quite honestly, I don't actually get the pineapple flavor, but maybe that's just a marketing gimmick. But this is putting off runners.
Yes.
Do all strawberry types put off runners?
I believe so. I believe so. That you want those runners. That's really a sign of a healthy soil and a healthy plant that's getting that nutrition because it wants to be putting up new runners, and we'll slowly kind of migrate our field so that you're grinding up with our rototiller. We're grinding up some of the old plants and letting those new runners come forth and grow to maturity.
And you mentioned a microclimate.
Oh, yeah.
How? So from state to state, that's probably going to vary. So obviously we know that Michigan versus Oregon versus Florida and Texas, very different growing regions, both in altitude, soil quality, temperature, and humidity. Those are vastly different. Plus waterfall here in the high desert of Oregon, we don't get a lot of rain. So how micro does the homeowner need to get to thinking about what's my microclimate?
Well, at the end of the day, it's all about location, right? Some locations just get a lot colder. Some locations struggle to grow certain plants. Strawberries can be cold sensitive, right? So if you're in a bottom of a valley that gets a lot of cold air pooling and it stays a lot cooler there than it does, you know, and closer to you, it might not be a great spot for strawberries. They overwinter all right, but it's those spring frosts that really can hurt them. And there's so you really have to assess your own backyard and say, like, is it going to be warm enough? You know, you got to get your thermometer out there, kind of checking on a regular basis. What is it early in the morning? What kind of lows are we seeing? Is this going to promote that strawberry growth? Because if this spring, let's say in the last month, if you've been seeing a lot of temps under 32 degrees, your strawberries aren't going to be very happy.
I'm not going to be very happy.
Yeah.
There's a time for that, and it's not now.
Absolutely. So so you really, you know, you have to assess your own microclimate. Plants, they need a few really basic things. They need really good sunlight. They need lots of water. And, you know, they need to be in that growing temperature range that's above 40 and below like 100 degrees.
Yeah. I don't know what happened in Michigan, but last year, I think everywhere had record heat. And during the summer, July, mid-July, here, we got into the 110s for a couple of days, and I tell you what, just about everything wilted, humans and plants. It was hot.
Oh, yeah. So we were seeing temps in the upper 80s, 90 degrees, which is pretty hot for Michigan. Now we have this spectacular microclimate with Lake Michigan, where the wind, predominant southwest wind, brings us cool air off the lake. So it helps moderate that temperature. So it was hot, but it was bearable here in northern Michigan.
Yeah, it wasn't too bearable at 115, 110.
Oh, I believe it. is funny because being right on the northern fringe of the good growing region, we really benefited from that heat. Our strawberries were sweet and large. We had a really great strawberry season. We had kind of had a freeze out, a total crop failure in tart cherry. So we really pushed the strawberries to put out as many berries and keep them as nice as long as we could.
So this is kind of an esoteric question, but you know, the berries we see in the store from Driscoll, everybody knows Driscoll, and I think that that's just a conglomerate of thousands of growers. For the person growing berries at home, and you bite into this big, beautiful red berry, and it just tastes insipid, like it's washed out. Is it either it is the variety of strawberry that just doesn't really have a lot of flavor, or could, if it's a strawberry that normally would taste really good, except now it tastes just bleh, what could lead to that?
Well, I really think it's a variety choice. That strawberry has been grown, and they decided to grow it because it's large and it's red and it's hardy. You can ship it across the country. It doesn't matter if it gets jostled a little bit. It's going to stay nice and pretty all the way to the consumer in the grocery store. I find they don't taste very good. They look nice. They don't taste very good. Generally, those berries that taste really good, like, you know, you go to your local farmer's market, you find some in your backyard, those ones that, when they taste good, they don't last that long. The shelf life is short. They definitely don't want to travel. They don't want to be shipped. And that's kind of that trade-off for the fabulous flavor is something that's perfectly ripe.
I mentioned four states, and in those four states, there is a vast difference in altitude. To your knowledge, are strawberries or certain varieties going to be altitude particular?
I'm sure they have ones that do better at certain altitudes. I'm not 100% sure on that just because, for the most part, most strawberry varieties do really well where we're at. And I haven't ever tried them in a high altitude environment. So.
Right. For people who want to, maybe, is there a better way to do it? So either in the ground or a raised bed, is one better than another as far as what makes the strawberry happy?
I like good soil, right? So
what does that mean?
And what that means to me is that I like an area where you know you're going to have enough good soil. For me, I like not to have a raised bed. I like a soil patch that I've been able to build with compost and other plants that I've been able to like let rest and really feel that it's a healthy soil environment before we go in there and plant. And I understand the idea of raised beds and you don't have to bend over and it sounds very appealing, but I think it's hard to have as healthy soil in your raised bed as you do maybe in a big flat garden area that you can rotate easier and manage easier.
I think corn, and you know better than I do, I think corn is pretty happy in a nitrogen rich soil. Are strawberries, are they looking for a neutral pH? Do they want acid soil? Do they want heavy nitrogen, heavy potash, calcium, or are they going to be fairly tolerant of pretty much wherever they land?
Well, they do want a special blend. They do want a special blend. They want, they want a lot of nutrients. They want a lot of nitrogen. If you're, especially my commercial strawberries that I want to put out a lot of fruit and really grow big green bushes, they can draw up to like 150 pounds of nitrogen a year. So
is that a lot?
Yeah. It's same as a fruit tree or many other commercial crops. So when you put that in compost, it really makes a lot of compost to get the 150-pound ratio. One of my favorite things to do, if you're into growing, find out who your local agronomist is, your local farm store, ask who the local agronomist is, and have them do a soil sample. The best thing you can do is they take a probe. They just take a little samples from all over your garden. They'll put it in a bucket, let it dry out a little bit, put it in a bag, and ship it to your local lab, and they give you a nice readout of where your soil's at right now and what do you need to really make it prime time. They're checking the pH. They're checking your estimated nitrogen output. They're definitely looking at your phosphorus and potassium, calcium, magnesium, sulfur, boron, copper, iron. They've got it all in there. So anybody that's struggling, one of my first suggestions is, I mean, can't go wrong with compost. So get yourself some really high quality compost. Make sure you got some wood ash in there, some molasses, some of those complex sugars, some things that are going to really be the building blocks of soil. And pair that with a soil sample so that you know, you get a better idea of what's going on underneath your feet.
Okay, that makes sense. And people who can, who have the space, could make their own compost piles.
Absolutely. It's a full-on hobby, though, right? If you're into it, it's cool, and I support that. You totally should.
Well, between the greens and the browns, it is a fair amount of work, but it's better than throwing it into the bin and going to the landfill.
Absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely. And it's great because the farm doesn't have any food waste. Anything we don't eat or sell, right back into the soil. Get it broke down, get it in there, and it disappears in no time.
For people who are coffee drinkers, are the coffee grounds going to be useful in their compost, or should they even just put them right in to the ground for the strawberries? Do the strawberries like that?
I put the coffee grounds in my personal compost. It's a great place for them. It's all going to become soil eventually. I think, yeah, that your compost, whatever's in there, as long as it's broke down, as long as it's had a good long time to sit and break down so that you're not putting anything that's got too much fresh nitrogen in it. You want those elements to sit for a while. You want it to cook. You want it to break down a little bit.
Okay.
So thinking about that, but, I really like biochar for backyards. You know, I tell people if you're gardening, biochar, which of course you guys can go down that Google rabbit hole, but it's very simple getting, uniform sized wood, burning it 80% of the way, and then putting the fire out, crumbling it up, spreading it around, amping up the carbon, in your soil.
There's a risk of putting too much ash in the soil because when water and ash get together, they produce alkaline, they produce lye. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that seems that at some point you're going to go from beneficial to not beneficial fairly quickly.
Yeah. And it's definitely about a balance. Soil's about a balance. That biochar is going to help you hold more water in your soil, but too much of a good thing doesn't work. You know, it's all about that balance. So, that's easier said than done, of course, but we find ourselves, working really hard to make sure that we've got enough water, that we've got enough compost and things going into it, and that we're growing enough out of it, right? That, where we're growing grass, that I want it to really be lush and green, and we want to be cutting it and turning those nutrients that used to grow that back into the soil, right? Same thing with, like the asparagus ferns and things. We want them cut, ground, and put back into the soil when we're done with them.
Is there, in home gardening anyway, there's a lot of talk about companion planting basil and tomatoes together because they're the natural insect repellent. I haven't seen that actually work, but it's a nice idea. Marigolds and tomatoes to keep away aphids and pests. Is companion planting with strawberries something that needs to happen? Does it work? Do strawberries have buddies they want in the ground?
Well, I don't do it on the commercial side. And I don't do it on the commercial side just because of a logistical reasons that I want to make sure that each plant I'm growing is getting the utmost amount of care and time from me and my employees, so that we really kind of focus on one thing at a time rather than the companion planting. I know, you know, it's a little bit like being a home chef versus a restaurant chef. Sometimes the home chef can do creative little things because they're only cooking for a few people and it doesn't matter if it takes all day, you know, versus, the restaurant chef that's ready to feed, you know, 1,000 people and it's intricate and beautiful, but it's also very time conscious. Right.
Right.
And so, I think the companion planting definitely falls into the home garden realm. I think people are doing very cool things with it and, the benefits, really vary. But I'm not seeing that on the commercial side very much.
So for the home planters who want to do this, and possibly only for an aesthetic appeal and also helping the plants, but they want to see pretty. And aesthetics is a very, very useful and valuable component of having a garden.
Absolutely.
What would be something that's pretty and helpful to the strawberries?
Oh, boy. I mean, I think there's a lot of options. I would think that you would want something that is going to be of similar height. You don't want to, shading is such an issue with plants that you want to make sure that you're getting all the sun you can get to those strawberry plants. So I wouldn't recommend going with anything too tall that's going to steal that that light, or anything that's too aggressive that's going to fill the spots where those strawberry runners. You want those strawberry runners to come up. So something that's very aggressive, like mint, might not be a great option because they're going to compete too much. Right?
Goes everywhere.
Yeah. So that's definitely going to take some careful thought about like how you want it to work.
So small plants like marigolds, which aren't going to get too tall.
Yes.
Good. All right.
So, and water is just so important for these strawberries. You know, like if you're going to do a couple things really well, making sure that you have the water on them, all the time, it's a great way to protect them against cold. So if you're worried about a frosty night, you just turn on the water, turn on your irrigation and let it run. And even if it's just trickle underneath, it'll be releasing some heat to help protect those berries on a cold night. But they use a lot of water and you want them to create big fat berries. So you want to make sure that you're using your water, and really making sure that's easy, especially if you're in a pot or, you know, you've got a raised bed that's got a little bit less soil in it. You want to make sure that you're not letting those plants get thirsty.
Is it possible, this is kind of a dumb question, but let me ask it a different way. If you overwater strawberries, would that maybe contribute to a fruit having a kind of an insipid, washed out flavor?
It can. I don't think I'd expect to see that from irrigation, though. You know, if you're having an inch of rain a couple of days a week for a couple of weeks, like especially right during the time when that berry is forming and starting to grow, we could call that cell division, you might get some rapid growth, which then doesn't generally have as good a flavor with too much water. But it's kind of hard to get to that point. I mean, here in Michigan, we see tons of rain. I'm seeing lots of irrigation, and the berries are so flavorful. You know, nice. They're smaller, but they're really full of flavor. So,
you know,
I'm not too worried about it. On the disease side, though, if it never dries out, you're in trouble. You really want that soil to be wet and saturated and then kind of dry down so that your roots aren't continuously submerged in water, because you will get some root rot issues if you're over wet.
All right. Well, since you brought it up, and that's something important to consider. So obviously there are four-legged critter pests and maybe some six, I don't know if spiders care, but there's definitely some six-legged pests. And then there's also the two-legged pests, but that's another issue. What are some, obviously build them out. That's one way to keep, probably the best way to keep the pests out. I personally try to go with zero to as little as possible in the way of chemicals on plants, because they
absolutely,
you don't know what's going to end up. It's tough. It's a tough call. So what should people do if they have to use chemistry? Is there something better than another one, or what's a good way to keep?
Chemistries are tough. It's a tough route to go, because it's expensive, it's time consuming, and it's complicated. So generally I tell people to avoid any type of spraying in your own backyard. That's not the best way to beat the pests in your own yard. When you have when you're a commercial grower and you have 100 acres, it's not like, is there going to be mold? It's how much mold, right? And then then it works to maybe take some of those steps to prevent that mold, to make sure your fruit doesn't go fuzzy. In the backyard, when you're only protecting a handful of plants, just keeping a really close eye on it, making sure they're healthy, making sure they're not stressed is the best thing you can do. Followed by, hey, if you start to see a little mold forming on a berry, pick it off. Remove it from the rest, right? The next berry, you lost that one, but the next ones will be okay. So some of the best ways to manage your pests are to keep them picked clean. Make sure that you don't have a lot of overripe berries, because those overripe berries are going to attract insects. They're going to breed mold, and they're going to create problems that are hard to stop. So if you just kind of every day look at your plants, pick out the bad berries, trim your canopy back is actually a really great way to help protect from mold, making sure that you're getting airflow, right? The more airflow you get, the more air movement you get, the less mold that's going to happen, and allowing that to just kind of naturally protect itself can do a lot, especially in your own backyard.
What does it mean to keep the plant stress-free? I guess the other question is, what's a stressor or stressors on, well, plants in general, but particularly strawberries?
Well, definitely, I've already mentioned it, but water is a big stressor. So you want to make sure that you've got enough water and that, and we're going there. You want to make sure that it's getting enough sunlight. You want to make sure that it's not competing with other plants. You know, if it's getting choked out by weeds, that's going to be stressing it. So, you know, just kind of the basic growing, gardening things that you just kind of go through that list. It seems simple, but the more and more you pay attention to it, the happier and happier your plants look. They look greener, they stand up straighter, and they produce better fruit.
You know, there's a popular thing that I see sold at nurseries for strawberries, and that's that bizarre looking strawberry pot, which has the little cutouts on the side.
Yeah.
And I've always thought those were just cute and attractive, but completely useless. Are they useless? Is it just me?
I can't comment because I've never tried one. I've seen them. I also am skeptical. We've never tried it. We just bought strawberry plugs, and you just put them right in the ground and get the straw on them, and keep the weeds away. And before you know it, you've got big, beautiful plants.
So now I don't know that this is so, but I've heard, especially, you know, all of the experts shopping for strawberries at the local Omega Home Depot store. If I go, or if someone listening goes to the store, the nursery, buys some strawberry plants, puts them in the ground now, expecting berries in 3 weeks, and they don't come, is there something about berries needing to have a whole season before they produce? Do you have to pinch back the first flowers? Is there something that needs to happen that people don't know about?
Well, timing is critical. And anytime you transplant a plant, there's a shock factor there. So if you're planting a new strawberry plant, it's going to be shocked. It's going to take time for it to get its roots growing, to really start pulling in the nutrients that's in the soil. There's a curve there for it to be really integrated into the soil and content. So you don't want to plant a plant and then expect it to produce right away. I mean, some plants do that better. Strawberries, if you put them in the spring, I wouldn't plant on a crop till the following year. Now that's where those day neutrals are kind of cool, because we planted day neutral strawberries in the spring, kept them healthy, and then that fall they had strawberries. And it was like a third of a crop of strawberries that fall. And then the following spring, we saw a full crop of strawberries. Following fall, I saw a full crop of strawberries.
As far as you know, is the day neutral something that people could go to a nursery and buy?
Yes, absolutely.
Or is that something you
have to get? They have several varieties, but it's like a style of strawberry.
Okay, very good. I'm sort of glossed over protection from birds and squirrels or chipmunks or something. What is it, aside from sitting somebody out there with a 22?
Yeah, which can be challenging. The birds love strawberries. They love your garden. The best scarecrow is one of those wavy arm used car salesman guys. They really hate those for some reason. I think that's a very effective
most humans do
scarecrow.
Too.
They make some really fancy netting that you can get most likely at your garden store or local organic supply, growing supply stuff. They do tightly woven nets that you can put over your garden that would protect it from bugs and animals, but still let in sun, wind, and rain. There's all kinds of netted options, but but definitely a raccoon, hard to stop. And if they decide they want strawberries because they're sweet and delicious, you know, good luck.
Do you have trouble with raccoons, or more interestingly, do you have trouble with deer eating your strawberries?
So not so much deer in the strawberries. They do love the orchard. They feel like they're in a buffet, and owners have left, you know. So we're constantly shooing the deer out from the fence, but we are fenced, which helps prevent most of the deer from coming in. They will absolutely eat young trees, though, first. They love the young, soft tissue, so that's where they head to right away.
Yeah, we have I lived in New Jersey for a few years, and the urban deer problem in New Jersey was spectacularly massive. I would see, I don't know what, herds, I guess, a herd of deer, a dozen deer at noon crossing the street going and looking for something to eat. And here too,
yep.
Middle of the day, I'll see deer and just walking down the street.
Yep.
It's a big, big problem.
And they love that high-end landscaping. You know, if it's really nice and green, they love to get in there, eat it right up.
Oh, thank you for giving me my food. I appreciate that.
So we've got a lot of birds. I've actually got a massive flock of crows that I've been trying to shoo out of the orchard, along with many other birds. One of the things we're using this year, it's called Bird Guard. and it is a high-end kind of recording of the birds that I find to be pests and raptors that are hunting them and giving their battle cry, and then those birds in distress. So the target birds. So the idea is that if we run these speakers all day for like a month in the springtime when the birds are nesting, they'll go nest somewhere else. And then we can turn them off again until we get bird problems in the orchard, and then we start them up again. And because they're not nested in the orchard, they won't want to fly through the sounds of distress. And ideally they'll go somewhere else. We've had mixed results. I mean, it's better than nothing, but there's also not really great solutions yet for birds.
Right. Yeah. We got lots of raptors out here.
Oh yeah.
And they're very fun to watch.
Yeah, my local hawks are doing a really great job. I saw them just sitting on top of the hawk box the other day. They're looking for the rodents. They're patrolling the orchard where we love
good
to have
for them.
Them.
That's right. Very, very good. Those runners that they make could, in terms of managing space, so we don't want to crowd out our strawberries. Say we've got some patch, either a box or just a piece of land. Should we let the runners set and become new plans? What do we do with the other plans? Is there a rotation process here? What's the best long-term continual practice for keeping a healthy strawberry bed?
In a commercial setting, they last for about 5 years. And you can only do about 5 years because after 5 years, we have cyclamen mites, which are very persistent. And they just infest a patch, can't be removed, will injure the fruit, injure the plants. And so in about 5 years, as you start to detect those cyclamen mites starting to build up, we find it's best to restart, disc those ones in, let that soil rejuvenate, and hopefully you've already got a new plant patch started for the replacement.
How long does soil rejuvenation take? Is that a whole season?
For us, I like to plan on 3 years.
Wow.
That gives it time for us to plant other crops, which will use different nutrients than the strawberries or the trees that were previously there. It allows the soil to rebalance itself. It breaks down all that root tissue that was left and anything like that, lets the nematodes and the other insects that are living in that soil kind of balance out before you come back in with the same crop.
So the solution, it sounds like, for at least managing microbes, pests, and little teeny six-legged things is good water for the plant. So a healthy plant is less resistant to problems than an unhealthy plant. Not overcrowding, a lot of water, a lot of sun for the plants that like sun. Are there other ways? And there probably are dozens or hundreds of things that want to attack strawberries. How do we manage the big ones? Is there more to do it than just that? Just keep a healthy bed and everything should work out?
You know, that's agriculture. Sometimes you do everything you can do and it still goes wrong, right? That definitely happens sometimes. I really find, though, the closer you pay attention, the more love you put in, the more likely you are to find success. So, it's just putting in that time, for sure.
So since we talked earlier about compost and putting everything in the compost, we want to make the observation that if you're pulling off a berry that's moldy or something's happened to it, that's got a disease on it, or you're pulling off yellow leaves from your strawberry plant, those are, or your tomato plant or something, those are not things you want to put back into your compost pile. Those are things you want to put in the garbage.
I usually put it in the compost pile. Go ahead and put it in there, in my opinion. And it depends how thoroughly you're doing your compost, right? So ideally, you're going to put it in your compost pile. It's going to get buried. It's going to go through the full compost like life cycle, which includes high heat at some point, that it's going to ferment, make high heat, and it's going to kill those pathogens and turn them into soil. So that generally the stuff that comes out of the compost should be fairly safe because it's been in there long enough.
Okay.
If you're not doing a great job composting, like my personal yard's not great compost, I might just pick those problem stuffs. Yeah, remove the mold from the field. Throw it out in a separate area. You know, it doesn't have to go in the compost. Just dump it out in the corner. It'll be fine. Same thing with those diseased plants. If you're really worried about an infestation, you've got some serious leaf spot that infected a couple of plants and you want to remove them, burning them is always a good option. You know, it'll kill the disease. It will reduce the matter that you had into ash, which can then be spread.
Okay. The other thing is, let's talk about soil type, because those same four states, I mentioned that here where I am, and I don't know anything about the rest of Oregon, but this is high, high clay content soil, and there are plenty of things that grow here. They obviously like it, but I know that, I think I know that some things prefer sandier, rich, black volcanic soil like you've got. Florida's got lots of sand. I'm guessing about Texas, but if you're in a place that has clay soil, the stores that you would go to buy strawberries, maybe they're selling strawberries to you that are going to grow in clay soil. Maybe I'm assuming too much about the vendor.
Yeah. Well, definitely, if you're going in, talk to a salesman. Whenever I go to a nursery, you know, you want to talk to a salesman about, yeah, what kind of light, what kind of soil. This is what I have in my backyard. Now, hopefully, you're in a position where you can put some compost on that soil, especially for a few years before you start planting. If you're thinking about a garden, sure, you can plant right now, but every year you put on that compost, it's going to get better, right? You're going to have more air pockets. You're going to have better drainage, the more soil and compost you can get out there. So, start by improving your soil and then definitely buy a plant that's going to handle that clay a little bit better. The other thing is just thinking about that drainage. If you have heavy clay soils, it's going to hold more water and you don't want it to sit in water. You may have to punch like a dry well. So dig a hole, put some stone in it, make an easy drain for that water to work its way through.
Hmm. That sounds like a lot of work.
It is. And it's funny because we've done this huge drainage project on the farm with dry wells. We rented a huge excavator and dug way down deep to break through the hard pan layers of soil and put in drain stone and ran tile across the orchard, which is sock pipe with stone around it to help move that water, because we're seeing way more intense rains than we used to. We're seeing a lot more volume. It's way more violent than it was previously in my when I was younger. And so to deal with that, we had to put this giant drainage project in, and it's really cool, but it's also very underwhelming because it's like, hey, see that little bit of rock right there? That's part of my massive drainage project. You know, it took a full year and all this stuff. Right. What's crazy, though, is then we see benefits from that all the time. You see standing water in people's yards and we're moving it out. You know, we're moving it out of the orchard and really helping the plants you know, get as much water as they can and take the excess away. All righty. Hey, I've got to run. I just got a call. I've got to go pick my kid up, but I would be open to another session or some more follow-up questions if you'd like to in the near future.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. All right. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate your accommodation, and we finally got to make this thing work. So.
Absolutely. I love I love talking fruit and growing plants. So anytime, please feel free to get a hold of me.
Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll add a link to King Orchards to the show notes page, which is culinarylibertarian.com/195. There you can find recipes and products you can order from fruit and spreads and jams and jellies and product to make beer or wine or cider. Getting the soil right is important. Check with your state university extension office for information about a detailed soil analysis. For the basic levels of nitrogen, phosphorus, potash, and pH, there's a kit I'll link to on the show notes page called the Lusterleaf Rapid Test Kit. It's pretty handy, I've used it, and it's a great place to begin understanding what's going on in your soil. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you being here. Thanks also to my Patreon supporters. You can become a patron at culinarylibertarian.com/support. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.
Mr. Artema was still living in the house, so my dad and Mr. Artema shared the house for like the first year and a half.
You know, you do what you gotta do.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And so we've been farming since 1980. My Uncle Jim quickly signed up. And we do all different kinds of tree fruit, really specialize in tree fruit, along with raspberries, strawberries, sweet corn, and assorted vegetables.
Yeah, my brother shook cherries there, but it was a long time ago, probably with either Scott and or
okay.
But that's back in 85, 86,
sure.
Maybe 87. Two lifetimes ago at this point.
Oh, yeah. The cherry harvest is such a great seasonal job for people. You come in, you work really hard, you crank up a bunch of hours, and you get paid pretty decent for really a short season.
Yeah, that's what he remembers. A lot of fun. I never did that. I was the guy cooking at Tapawingo back then.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So, it's memory lane. I don't think there's a future for me in Michigan just because of my family and what my wife does. But more and more and more, I keep thinking about, I really miss. I miss part of the geography of Central Lake. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of that here in South Oregon. It's different, but we're pretty much even as far as latitude goes with Ann Arbor.
Sure.
But it's not the same weather because we're 5,000 feet.
Yeah.
But there's... And part of the risk is that what you remember of a place maybe only exists there in your head.
Yeah.
It might be true that the Central Lake I remember isn't really there anymore. It might be because I don't think it's grown that much.
Yeah.
But
Our population density is increasing, though, especially since COVID. More and more people are living in the area. A lot of those seasonal cottages have become year-round homes.
Yeah, that was part of the thing that was nice was that it wasn't that crowded. Yeah. And you knew everybody. In fact, you knew everybody not in Central Lake and Bel Air and Eastport, possibly in Atwood.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, anyway, yeah. Like I said,
it's still a pretty,
those things change.
It's still a pretty small world up here. So you get to know people and, people are really friendly. It's still a very nice place to live.
That's tied to
that, we're the second most diverse agricultural climate behind California. So we can grow more different types of crops. So if you're into food, into eating seasonally, Michigan's the place to be. We have more options and more good food being grown locally than anywhere else.
It's that black volcanic soil that's not clay.
No.
All I got here is clay. Oh, my God. What a pain in the butt. Anyway,